Best of show, hour three of that show. Cattle's out. Back Tuesday. Whitey, a co-host chair. In the meantime, and yes, Nick is fine. Not fired. We didn't fight. He's not dead or injured or sick or anything else. Just had some business to take care of on the home front. We're holding it down here in the meantime, and we appreciate Whitey sitting in the co-host chair. You can always check us out at youtube.com/SacktownSports. Hit that like button. 24 likes about halfway into the show. Yesterday, we wanted 50 so that Simone would karaoke. What song was it you were going to karaoke?
Proud Mary.
In honor of Tina Turner. And we came up just short.
I know.
Really.
We'll think of something fun for tomorrow Friday.
I was disappointed in the people, though, Simone. I was disappointed in the people that they didn't make that happen.
I think a lot of people are enjoying the holiday weekend. Maybe pre-empty.
That could be it. But hit those likes, subscribe, rate, review. Ooh, it went up. It went up to 25 just while we were talking.
There you go.
Wow. Go ahead and keep hitting that
like button.
Maybe Simone sings Proud Mary today. You can always jump in on the show as well by texting 916-339-1140, or you can give us a call at 800-920-1140. We talked on the show yesterday, Whitey, and we've talked about this a few times over the last few weeks here on the program about the possibility of the NHL coming to Sacramento. And Chris Biederman today had a piece at the Sacramento Bee. And I'll be honest and frank and open and transparent. It's been unclear to me how much fire there is to this smoke.
Very preliminary.
You know what I mean?
Of
an NHL team coming to Sacramento. And Chris, he cleared some of that up for me in this article. At this point, it's purely speculation. There have been three teams. It has been, who has it been mentioned in connection with? I'm looking at the article right now, and I just lost
Ottawa,
my place.
Houston.
It was Houston.
Three cities?
Yeah, three cities. Oh. Houston, Sacramento, and Salt Lake City. Just found it. Lost my place in the article. I hate it when an ad pops up and all the text moves. So
that's why you don't want robots right there calling your strikes.
Yeah, we do.
An ad pops up, and then what's going to happen?
We're not going to know if it's a ball or a strike.
No. Redo.
You're trying to sell me Nikes calling a ball or a strike. You know what I mean?
They follow their programming.
But it's those three teams have just been, or those three cities have just been named as, prospective destinations for the Phoenix Coyotes.
I think Kansas City has been mentioned as well in some corners. So I think there have been four.
That I had not seen in the article. Jay pointed this out yesterday. They're going to play in Arizona State's campus in the meantime, which seats roughly
Mullet Arena or whatever it is.
5,000. It is called Mullet Arena.
Yeah.
And it fits 5,000 people. By the way, a lot of mullets in Arizona. So it makes sense. It adds up. But we even mentioned maybe Vivek Renadive, who pulled out of the Ottawa Senators bidding. Maybe that's because of this whole Phoenix Coyotes thing. And Chris points out, again, those are just speculative dots being connected. And the real question I've had about this whole thing was, can Golden One Center host a hockey team? And I've gotten different answers on that. But according to Chris's article, he says the arena first opened in 2016, has been discussed as a possible option for a hockey team, though the arena was built for basketball and doesn't have a big enough lower bowl to seamlessly hold a regulation hockey rink without obstructed views. So it doesn't sound like it's necessarily built for hockey. It wouldn't be your typical hockey viewing experience if you went and watched a game there. But between that and we talked about the A's have been thrown out as coming here. An MLS team is something that was right on the verge of happening before the pandemic hit in 2020. My question is this, and as somebody who's been here, man, almost a year. We're coming up. We just passed 11 months of your boy here in Sacramento. I ask this somewhat as somebody who is still kind of new to the scene. Jay, Simone, and obviously Whitey, maybe you could help me out. Can Sacramento support a second professional sports team, or is this made to be a one-team town? Or are the Kings the darling of this city, and that's just the way that it's meant to be?
I think it's an open question, which is why we still only have one team here. You know, and MLS was very close to coming here, and the pandemic was a factor, but they couldn't find enough you know, funding and investments, because there are some questions. I think in the case of a hockey team, just one of the things off the top of my head, I think if it was a really good hockey team, it'd be supported well. If it was a bad hockey team, you know, Sacramento fans are a lot more sophisticated than they were when the Kings first came here in 85, for example. If you had a bad hockey team, there's going to be some diehards that are going to be out there every night. But, you know, by and large, Sacramento's not going to flock to Golden 1 to see a bad hockey team.
So it would they'd have to come here and immediately have some success.
I think so.
To get those roots down of a fan base.
Sacramento would be different because you already have the foundation with you know, Sac Republic. But hockey, yeah, that's what I think.
Jay, we talked about, and you said you would prefer almost an MLS team over an NHL team. Could the city support both or either one, in your opinion?
Both, as far as for me, would be soccer and baseball. I think they would support both. The hockey, I'm not so sure about, what Whitey's saying. I think it works so much in the fact that with Vegas, it was the only thing really cooking in Vegas at the time, right? And it was homegrown from Vegas, where the Raiders are, you know, they're coming in. The A's look like they're getting ready to
jump
in.
And it was a good team, too,
yeah,
for the jump.
Yes,
yeah.
And that's one thing the NHL has done a great job is expansion teams, they're giving them, you know, great rights, good top draft picks,
yeah,
and availability to go get other players, you know, from other teams. For me, MLS is a no-brainer. MLS should have been here already.
Yeah.
You know, the league is, for me, you know, has siphoned Sacramento to the point of they're going to bleed them until they can get the most money from Sacramento. And I believe they think Sacramento is so, you know, so eager to get a soccer team, they'll pay that $500 million expansion fee now. At one point in time, it was $75 million. Then it went up to $250, $500
million.
It's $500 million now.
Oof.
For Team 31 and 32. They just put San Diego in for Team 30. Mm. MLS, no-brainer. It's easy. It's ready to go. It's turnkey. And what has been, you know, talked about is Sac State shares the outside venue, which will be cold and dope. If I'm
right.
Sac State, you put the Causeway Classics there, you know, Sac State now football over the last couple seasons are cranking out great teams.
Yeah.
You know, build it, they'll come, right? Baseball.
It's a multi-purpose.
Oh, yeah, you need a
stadium.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Baseball, for sure. It's right on the edge of it. You know, the River Cats, they bring in 9,000-10,000 people on a Thursday, a
mm-hmm.
Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
When they first came, they were number one in attendance for years.
Yeah.
Now Las Vegas has, you know, crept up and jumped in front of them. And new ballparks around the country have crept in. But baseball and soccer for me, yeah, I think so. Hockey, I'm with Whitey. I'm not too sure.
You got a facility issue in baseball because originally when they built Raley
mm-hmm.
Field,
yep.
The plan
yeah.
was that you can add a second deck when
yep.
you expand. But apparently, and it's kind of hard to find out exactly what happened, they had to hurry it along when they actually finished it, and I think the weather had something to do with it, and so I don't think it's actually as easy to put a second deck on there as they originally hoped. They weren't able to put the stadium together the way they intended.
But real quick, Simone, before you jump in, my thing with that is this. Knock it down, but you have the space. You have the availability. For
sure.
Years, they were talking about putting a casino right there on the mm-hmm. other side of the river. So I think you have the availability, which is what Oakland has been talking about for a while, is, look, we have a huge open space and two arenas, two stadiums right next to each other. We can knock all of this down. And as Whitey said a couple days ago, look, we can bring a state-of-the-art stadium or arena. So, yeah, I think baseball works.
Is the – and Simone, I want your thoughts, too,
yes.
on if you think the city can – but is – the politics of Sacramento, are you going to get the money if you need a new arena for a hockey team, if you can't make it work at Golden 1 Center, if you need to tear down Raley Field and build a new stadium? It seems like the funding is already in place for the MLS stadium, so that seems like the most likely
right.
and plausible one to do. Do you think the politics of Sacramento, we'd get through the funding that has been a hurdle for all these other cities in getting these arenas or stadiums built?
Not, you know, a hockey specific, I don't think.
At the
so.
End of the day, it's going to come, you follow the money. You know what I mean? In terms of trying to figure out if it's a viable thing and something that you can do. I just don't know that the money is there. It would be that easy to get the money out of the city that you'd probably need to do what Jay is talking about with tearing it down and building from the ground up, or building a hockey arena. Like I said, the MLS seems to already be there. And also, Simone, I agree with what Whitey said about the prospect of a hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
If it got off to a bad start, good luck building like a loyal, long-standing fan base here in Sacramento.
And I think so much of that Venn diagram of the fans that would be Kings fans and potential NHL fans, it would be really hard. I didn't really consider that before, that the seasons would be overlapping, and how do you, you know, dedicate yourself to the Kings in the same way that you have been for so many years and still take on this new, you know, team that you want to be loyal to as well. I think I have to reformat my NHL proposition. I guess I had a really selfish personal
stance. Not as possible
stance
as you maybe thought it
was.
Yeah,
but MLS definitely does make a lot of sense, and I think Jay was really spitting there.
Yeah, Jay, I think that's the one that it seems like is the most.
Oh, it's turnkey.
Is the most, yeah, like I said.
It's ready to go. Yep. I mean, it was ready to go years ago, and, you know, they just wanted a little more backing financially, and, you know, to whatever concerns or who the people that's intertwined into that circle, only they know, you know, of course. But I think it's easier to grab someone to say, hey, listen, man, we just need a little more paper on the table. Let's turn it over and make it make sense. For me, from everything I've read, know, understand, the league is playing a little hardball with Sacramento. Not so much as Sacramento is not willing to do some things. And,
right.
You know, that's what I hear.
Moving the goalposts.
Yes.
I read the story. You told me more about the story, Jay. They seem to just have pulled the rug out from under Sacramento with the whole MLS thing.
Yeah.
Right before, or right as the pandemic was hitting, which that sucks, man. That sucks. The city did all the work. They checked all the boxes that they were asked to check to get the team, and then at the last minute,
they had a celebration on Capitol that I was there. We entered this very show, interviewed Don Garber, literally the commissioner of MLS, right there in front of me, 2 feet, and he was like, hey, congratulations.
That's cold-blooded. Just pull the rug out from
come on now.
That's not cool. Right after this, the Celtics trying to make history. What's the most history you've ever witnessed in the world of sports? We'll discuss right after this.
Cattles and Rami.
Sacktown Sports.
That's the show. Whitey in for Cattles. I am Rami. Jay and Simone on the other side of the glass. Kings legend Jerry Reynolds will be here coming up at 4:30. At 4:45, we'll play Who's to Blame? We like to point fingers on the Cattles and Rami show, and we'll do just that coming up
at
4:45. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're very good at that.
Got to be good at that in this business. It's what we do. We can't be rational and level-headed and be like, well, there are probably multiple people who share some of them. No, it's one person
right
is usually to blame in this industry, Whitey, and we'll point our finger at that person coming up at 4:45. But we've talked, and we'll talk more about the Eastern Conference Finals, which will tip off at 5:30, and the Celtics trying to make history, be the first team in 151 attempts to come back from an 0-3 deficit in a playoff series and come back and win it. And we were talking yesterday during the break. You were like, what's the coolest, most historic thing you've witnessed in sports? And I've got, I don't know if maybe this is a humble brag. Maybe I'm just overestimating. I feel like I've got a couple pretty cool experiences that I got to enjoy in person, like in the moment and being on the scene at the time. Did you have one in mind in asking me that question, though?
No, not really. If we're going in person, it wasn't a cool moment. It was, well, I was at the Earthquake game, the Giants and the A's. So as far as the most historic, being there getting ready for, what was that, game 3? That was obviously, I have a hard time finding the words to describe that.
I was 9 years old at the time.
I was 11.
And it's like one of my earliest sports memories. And to this day, because there was an infamous shot of the Oakland Bridge, the top level, like, is it the Oakland Bridge or the Bay Bridge?
The Bay Bridge, yeah.
Collapsed down onto the first level. And to this day, Whitey, I have a fear of bridges.
Well, like, until they redid they redid it fairly recently. You could see that section was clearly, you could, when you went over it, you could say, oh, that's the part that fell.
When I go over a bridge, like, I grip the steering wheel. Uh-huh. And it's because that's like, that image is seared in my mind from seeing it at a very young age. And now I'm terrified. It's funny you brought that up.
Yeah.
Like, I start shaking when I go. And I recently went to the bay and drove over that bridge, and one of the more terrifying experiences of my life. Wow. Even though it should be, yeah, it shouldn't be. I should say, yeah.
But you know, people know all about that by now. But that's probably the most historic thing I actually witnessed. But it sounds like you've got some.
Some interesting. I mean, I don't know how much people care about this person, any of these, you know, per se. But
Bernie Brewer going down the slide or something.
Oh man, so good, so good. No, does the name Tuffy Rhodes mean anything to you?
Oh yeah, Jay, you were there that day.
I was in the very
opening day '94.
I was literally in. My dad got us opening day tickets. Literally the last row.
Papa Macloff with the big paper.
The last.
Holy cow,
Jay, literally
Tuffy
the
Rhodes.
Literally the last four seats in the last row of the upper
deck. Is that
with
the Seagulls?
Yes, literally up there with the wind was whipping, man. It was freezing, but I saw a dude hit four home runs in one baseball game, which you don't see very often. And I was like, he was a rookie. I was like, man, we got the next big thing. This guy's going to.
He ended up with, what, six for his career or something?
He is the Japanese home run king, though, from what I understand. Uh-huh. Went over to Japan and had himself a hell of a career.
I remember that. I was at the Giants game that day, and I think Matt Williams hit a home run or a couple home runs. And I remember, you know, looking at the scores, like, wow, who's Tuffy Rhodes? You see what he did today?
I'm realizing now as I'm thinking about these, they're all baseball and Cubs related, but it's okay. It's what that's what I've been.
But hey, that's historic.
That's what I've been to.
And
the
it was
most.
Remarkable. I've been to many baseball games. I've never seen anyone hit four home runs in a game.
I was at a near historic game. Juan Guzman had a no hitter going for 8 2/3 innings. To this day, I will hate Otis Nixon for slapping a hit that one hopped the left center field wall and broke up a no hitter with one out to go. This dude broke up a no hitter, and then this makes me mad to this day to even tell this story. I should have witnessed the longest grand slam in the history of major.
Were you in the bathroom?
I should have caught the longest grand slam in the history of what is now American Family Field, formerly Miller Park. My buddy made us late to a game. He was just late. You know
who
what I mean?
Who hit that?
Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, okay.
Hit a home run. And it literally, I saw the highlight later. I'm sitting at the game watching the highlight, and the ball smacks off a State Farm ad. And I turn around, and I kid you not, we're sitting right up against the State Farm ad. Like, it went right to our seats, Whitey.
But where were you? I don't understand.
My buddy was just late. Like, we were just waiting for him to go to the game, and we were late.
Yet?
Yeah, it happened in the first inning, and we didn't get there until, like, the second or third inning. And I pulled up the highlight on my phone, and I was like, that ball landed right here, dude. That would be in my hands right now if not for you being late for this baseball game.
I got to say, the quality of your stories, you know, from I saw a guy had four home runs. Okay. I saw a guy almost pitch a no-hitter. I wasn't there, but I
almost caught the longest grand slam in the history of a stadium. Yeah, I know. I missed it.
I saw Lincecum. We were in San Diego. We saw Lincecum's no-hitter against the Padres.
Oh, I also left one of the, like, greatest comebacks ever at a baseball game. In the ninth inning, the Brewers were down by like 6 runs, and you know, they stopped selling beer. It was Labor Day, I believe, and we left, and they came back and won on a Vogelbach grand slam.
Oh, big fella. What about anything you saw on TV, still witnessed it? That really, you know, obviously we've all seen so many great
for
games
me,
and Super Bowls.
For me, and this
and
might be
Olympics.
For all of you, again, baseball related, I could not take my eyes off the home run race between Sosa and McGuire in 98. Could not take my eyes off that, man. And, like, no matter where you were, and this is probably the last time baseball had this kind of pull or gravity, almost no matter where you were, networks were going to it, like ESPN would cut to it,
right?
And like restaurants, bars, wherever you were, they'd turn it on, and the place would get silent, and everybody would look up at the TVs and watch.
It's funny you say that, because I saw McGuire had broke it, but I saw Sosa hit his 61st at Wrigley against the Rockies.
That was like I said, probably the last time baseball had that kind of pull. You know what I mean? That kind of gravity to it where something was happening and the whole...
I think Bonds.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, they were stopping everything to watch Bonds.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they did. I guess I don't have as warm and fuzzy feelings about that.
For some, not everybody was tainted.
But and semantics. Part of it,
it's because what we found out that what happened in 98 was tainted.
But you know what? This is I've learned, especially being a boxing fan, Whitey, is people who hate you, they tune in to see you lose or hate on you versus people who love you, they tune in to love you too, right? So I think that was the big thing with Bonds. Bonds brought everybody to the forefront. Like, you're rooting against them or you're rooting with them, or you just didn't have no dog in the fight and you were just, you know, there for the ride.
Hate watching. There's a term for it. It's hate watching.
Yeah, hate watching.
or on social media, some people will hate follow.
Hate,
exactly.
Hate.
Right after this, a guy who's witnessed a few historic things for the Kings and elsewhere in the world of basketball, Kings legend Jerry Reynolds joins the show next. Play the blame game coming up at 4:45. Point some fingers, as we like to do here on the Cattles and Rami show. Whitey in for Cattles today and tomorrow. Nick will be back after the long Memorial Day weekend and joining us right now on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Needs no introduction. You know him, you love him. Kings legend on a number of different fronts. Jerry Reynolds, our guest. Jerry, how are you this afternoon, sir?
Well, just great being with Whitey, Rami, and now Jerry. Whitey, Rami, and Jerry. What do you think?
It has a ring to it. It has a ring to it. Maybe I should join the podcast that you guys do together.
Well, I think that probably it definitely would improve things.
Well, I appreciate that, Jerry. Let's start things off with the Kings. I do want to look around the rest of the NBA with you, but now the season in the books, obviously a good one that exceeded most people's expectations around this basketball team, but now it's about building on that. Where do you think the greatest opportunity for growth and improvement is for this Kings team this offseason?
Well, I feel that they really need another power player, you know, a guy who can play power forward as well as center, backup center, and fit with Domas, you know. And I think it's easy to say and hard to find, but there's maybe some guys out there they could go after, and I think that's the real need. I mean, you can always use more good shooting and then maybe a wing defender type thing, but I think the biggest need really is that, you know, a big, tough, strong guy, you know, kind of a Bobby Portis type, but you're not going to get him since he's under long-term contract. But somebody like that that can play center effectively and can stretch the floor as a four.
Almost sounds to me, Coach, like you're talking about somebody like, I don't know, Naz Reid, somebody like that? Is that?
You know, that might be it. I've really enjoyed watching that guy play the last year or so. I mean, he's just getting better and better with his deep shot. He plays, you know, I don't know enough about him personally, and I'm sure the Kings front office has a lot more information. So, you know, whether he's a great teammate or coachable and all that stuff, you'd want to know. But I think just the talent that he has and that he's young would seem to be an awfully good fit to me.
Jerry, I wanted to ask you how you think Vezenkov might fit. And I know I have suggested that, hey, maybe if he's agreeable to it, maybe you could move him to get an asset that would help you. And a lot of Kings fans don't like me mentioning that at all. They're already very protective of this guy. But from what you've seen of Vezenkov, how do you think he's going to potentially fit into the way Mike Brown puts things together?
Well, he certainly looks like a terrific shooter. So I know with Mike Brown, very creative coach, I think he could find minutes for him and, you know, can utilize him. I certainly would think that. I don't know that he solves some of the problems that need to be solved like we're talking about. I'm not sure, you know, what he's going to do defensively to improve the team or really protect the rim, you know, might create some actual other problems that way. But I would tend to agree with you. I mean, the way I look at it, he's an asset. I mean, to you or to someone else. One thing about him, there's enough teams in the league have seen him and like him. So if he could help you bring something that is as good or better at a better fit, I don't know why you wouldn't do that. I mean, that's how you get better. And that's what you want for this team. And it's kind of like with the draft pick. If you can use the draft pick – along with something else to get you the player you need, you've got probably a 2 or 3 year window. You can't count on 5 years. You'd like to, but I mean, so anyway, I guess that's my feeling, is that the guy is clearly an asset. He has value to the Kings and he has value to the league. And that's a real bonus as far as trying to build your team even better.
Talking with Jerry Reynolds, Kings legend, here on the Cattles and Rami show. Looking around the rest of the NBA playoffs, and I think a lot of other folks, Jerry, thought, man, the Western Conference is wide open, and maybe even thoughts of the Kings making it through the West were dancing through a few folks' heads before they ran into the Golden State Warriors. The deeper we go, though, and the more I see of Nikola Jokic and this Denver Nuggets team, they are the class of this conference, and we were all, I don't know about you, Jerry, probably not to the extent I was. You know the sport much better, but I think we all were underestimating them or missing the boat a little bit on just how good these Nuggets are.
Well, I was too, by the way. I was too, and I didn't realize Jamal Murray had really progressed back to, you know, or better than even before the injury. So that surprised me. And then, of course, I think, the bench and how Coach Malone utilized them, is certainly they've been more productive than I anticipated. But, yeah, I underestimated them. But I'm with you, too, is that, you know, they're going to be the team to beat now for quite a while. And as long as Joker's standing up on both legs, they will be. So, but the rest of the West isn't scary in my mind. I mean, if I were, you know, with this Kings team, they're close to,
yeah,
to everybody else, that's for sure.
Jer, what to your eye did Boston do better in game 4 against the Heat? And do you think that Boston, you know, no one's ever come back from down 3 games. Does Boston have a shot still at winning this series?
I would say if they win tonight, they might. I mean, I wouldn't count on, nobody ever has, but then again, you know, nobody had in baseball until the Red Sox beat the Yankees, you know. So there's always a first, and I do think that the Celtics are a more talented team. They haven't played like it. But, you know, as to what they did better, I thought, they just didn't let the ball stick so much. I mean, instead of kind of taking turns with Tatum and Brown, I mean, and to their credit, I thought they moved the ball better. And, you know, you got a lot more people involved in the offense. And I think when Al Horford and Grant Williams can make some shots and all that, I mean, it really makes them a better team.
Jerry Reynolds, our guest for a few more minutes here on Cattles and Rami on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. You mentioned, and it was another thing I realized as I was watching these playoffs, that not only are the Nuggets good now, they're going to be a problem for a while when you look at the age of that core that they have there. The flip side of that coin, though, LeBron may not be something to worry about for very much longer. What did you make of his comments and saying he has a lot to think about when it comes to his future and the game of basketball after they were eliminated?
Yeah, I'm guessing, Jerry, you probably haven't slept a wink since you heard that LeBron might be retiring, right?
I've just been a tizzy since then, you know. And, I was kind of hoping maybe everybody on the Lakers would contemplate retiring, you know. But probably no such luck. But, you know, I think they just caught LeBron at a, you know, tough moment. Obviously, you know, Father Time eventually will win, but Father Time hasn't taken too much damage on him. I agree with kind of what he said. He's better. He said, I'm better than 90% of the leagues, if not 95 players in the league, and absolutely is. You know, he's not the number one guy anymore, but he's probably in the top 10 still. And I'd be surprised if he doesn't. I'd be very surprised. I think he was just pretty depressed at the moment, kind of thing, getting swept. But he didn't look like an old man out there to me too much. He may be tired in the second half a little, but anyway, I don't take it at face value. I expect it's kind of like Tom Brady. Even if he retired, he'd come back about the first month.
hey, Jer, before we let you go, I believe it was yesterday on our pod, Old Fashioned 3, you and Phantom were talking about how something needs to be done about flopping. So I guess somebody at the league office listened. How do you feel about the league now apparently deciding that they might start throwing tees at guys and sending the other team to the foul line if players are flopping?
Well, I'd like to see them do something about it, but I'm not sure that they'll do the right thing. I'm afraid it's going to get into one of those things. They got to go to the videotape or monitors, and they'll spend 2 minutes deciding if it's a flop or not. And I guess what I'm saying is I'm not optimistic it's going to be handled properly any more than they decided they were going to really clean up the interrupted dribble, which is everybody that dribbles anymore interrupts their dribble to get somewhere. So I don't know. I don't know what you do. I mean, it's kind of like the 3-point shooters. You know, to me, you can't even guard them, and it's like until the referees kind of clean that up to where, you know, if you brush somebody as you run by, I don't know that deserves 3 free throws, or hit their trunks, and with flopping like that, it's like, well, yeah, if Joel Embiid bumps into you, you know, it might look like a flop, but it also might be you got the crap knocked out of you.
Possible, yeah.
I mean, they always used to talk about Vlade, and yes, he flopped, but I mean, against Shaq, I don't think those were flops. He was getting knocked goofy.
Yeah.
That's Jerry Reynolds, the Kings legend on a number of different fronts, and our guest for the last few minutes here on Cattles and Rami. Always appreciate the time, Jerry. I'm sure we'll talk again soon,
see
sir.
You, Jerry.
Well, hope so. Take care, guys.
Have a good one. And give a plug to the podcast.
Oh, Old Fashioned 3 podcast. We have another episode dropping tomorrow. It's Jerry Reynolds and myself and The Phantom.
Nice. So folks can check that out wherever they get podcasts. My pleasure. Coming up on the other side, who's to blame? We point fingers here on the Cattles and Rami.
Who did what and why?
Who are you pointing the finger at?
It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you place the blame.
It's who to blame
on Cattles and Rami.
Yeah, it's who's to blame here on Cattles and Rami. Like I said, why be level-headed? Why be rational? And be like, oh, multiple people probably. No. One person. One person
as long
is
as it's
always
not me,
to
I'm
blame
all for it.
When it comes to sports talk radio. And Whitey, I've noticed it. We've probably been guilty of it here on the Cattles and Rami show. The Denver Nuggets won the Western Conference Finals. Did so in impressive fashion, making quick work of one of the greatest basketball players to ever play this game in LeBron James and sweeping him and the LA Lakers. And in the NBA zeitgeist, which we are a part of, maybe a very small part of, but a part of, not a lot of the talk has been about the Denver Nuggets. There was, of course, LeBron and the whole will he, won't he retire. Then we quickly turned our attention to the Eastern Conference Finals and what's going on there. We'll get to this at 5:15, but silly season has already started in terms of trade and off-season speculation in the NBA. It seems like everybody is talking about everything other than the Western Conference champion Denver Nuggets and maybe the best player on this planet right now in Nikola Jokic. And one person who took notice of that was Charles Barkley on TNT.
Hey, how about the Denver Nuggets with a sweep? The first time they've ever swept a best of seven. First time they're ever going to the NBA final.
I just want to thank you, Ernie, for starting with the Denver Nuggets. I mean, I was so mad this morning, I had to turn the TV off. Because the Denver Nuggets, who have been the best basketball team in the world all season, sweep, get to the finals for the first time. Now, you know Mike Malone, I love him, but he's whiny. But he does have a point.
No, he has a great point.
He has a great point.
A great point.
I mean, that's like, and I love Mike Malone. I cannot wait.
Michael Malone. If you really love him, call him Michael.
Okay. Michael Malone. I can't wait to get to Denver. I was so glad. I was so mad watching TV this morning to everything. And listen, we all love LeBron. He didn't say he was retiring yet. When he does that, we'll do all that stuff. But it should have been all about the Denver Nuggets and Joker, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter, and those guys. It was awesome. And let me tell you something, Ernie.
Yeah.
When that team,
oh my gosh,
when they were getting stomped last night and came back and won, that was impressive. And that should have been what we talked about all day.
That was Charles Barkley on TNT. Meanwhile, Chris Mannix of SI, he joined Rich Eisen, and he said, there's a good reason we don't talk a lot about the Denver Nuggets.
The card the Nuggets can play is nobody talks about us. Nobody, you know, spends airtime discussing us. Colin Minch is writing about us because, frankly, the Nuggets aren't very interesting. Like, Nikola Jokic is arguably the best player in the game right now, but he's not someone that does a lot of interviews outside of the NBA-mandated stuff. You're not going to see a lot of profiles on Nikola Jokic. Jamal Murray, great player, not especially interesting. Michael Porter Jr., excellent player, not especially interesting, at least not compared to what we have at the bottom of the playoff bracket, where you've got drama in Los Angeles almost weekly. You've got the Suns. Can they succeed in this first year with Kevin Durant? The Warriors, all their dysfunction this year. The Clippers, can they get it together? The Nuggets' problem is they're not respected. They're just not talked about. People just don't find them as interesting as some of the teams on the bottom half of the bracket.
Whitey, who's to blame? Why aren't the Nuggets getting the love they deserve? Is it the media? Is it us in the media not doing our job? Or is it the Nuggets for being boring?
It's the commissioner of the NBA himself, Adam Silver.
When
he took
that?
Over, because when he took over from David Stern, 2014, he said, in the past, the NBA has promoted stars, and we're going to promote teams because we think the NBA should be about teams. And they haven't done that, and maybe someone convinced them that's not good business. But that's why we have an excellent team in the Denver Nuggets, but people don't care because they're more interested, as Chris Mannix says, and I love Chris Mannix, they're more interested in drama, off-court drama. No, it's basketball. And the biggest reason we don't have the appreciation we should have for the Denver Nuggets is because the NBA has not done a very good job highlighting how unique and talented and great this team is.
I do love off-court drama and speculation and trade rumors and free agents. I love that stuff, Whitey. And I think it gives more juice to a sport. It gives more life to a sport. I think that's what baseball used to have. JJ and I talked about it last week. How big the Major League Baseball's trade deadline used to be, with the owners' meetings and the winter meetings and the off season, and how much action there, or at least rumors of action there always was around that. And it just sort of lost all that. So I have no problem with some of that stuff stealing some of the spotlight. It goes too far sometimes.
Yes.
And we'll bring you a few examples of that coming up at 5:15. But I enjoy that stuff being part of the discussion.
Of course.
That being said, the Nuggets do deserve a little bit more love than what they've gotten. And I do, but we have to own some of that blame in the media for not giving it to them and going for what's sexy, you know what I mean? Going for what's scandalous or whatever what drama there might be off the court.
You're sexy.
All the speculation that we can do when it comes to sports that I'm talking about how much I love. There is a time and place for that, and there's a time and place to give recognition and give flowers to a team as good as the Denver Nuggets. That being said, it's also LeBron James' fault. Like, we need to blame LeBron James for this. Do we not?
And he's dragging it out. Dragging it out. Now says he's going to take this summer to decide whether he wants to play.
A couple days ago, we talked with Brian Geldzeiler of NBA TV and NBA Radio, and he said, look, it's okay that LeBron is the story today. It makes sense that LeBron is the story today. When the first or second best basketball player in most people's eyes goes to a podium after he's bounced from the playoffs and goes, oh, I might retire next year.
I got a lot to think about, to be honest.
People are going to talk about that. Like, we're going to turn on these microphones the next day and not talk about that. Of course we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We did what we were supposed to do in talking about LeBron James. It was LeBron who could have waited 2 days before saying what he said to give Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets their due time to get their due credit and get
it's
the
going out tonight for sure
and get the flowers thrown at them that they probably deserved. LeBron is to blame. That's
yes.
Who's to blame.
I agree, but it's not that we owe the Nuggets something. Whatever. Oh, we owe them more respect. It's about the NBA has done a poor job of showing basketball fans how great Jokic and the Nuggets are. This is basketball, a very beautiful brand of basketball, and this is our game, and the league needs to help people to appreciate that so that they can appreciate the game better, because it's the National Basketball Association. It still has to be about the basketball, and the NBA has not done a good job showcasing this brilliant basketball team that is the Denver Nuggets.
So that's who's to blame. We are the deciders. We are the judge and the jury on who's to blame here.
And we're right.
On the Cattles and Rami show. We'll hit a quick break on the other side, fourth and final hour, and we'll get into the big story in the top spot.
Cattles
and Rami.
Sactown Sports.